You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There's CSI, and then there's the real thing. In a book called Blood Secrets, Chronicles of a Crime Scene Reconstructionist, Rod Englert tells the story of his rise from rookie cop to pioneer and leading authority in the field of forensic blood spatter analysis. It's published by Thomas Dunn Books and written with the help of Kathy Passero. Mr. Englert is a 44-year veteran of law enforcement, a graduate of the FBI National Academy. He's also a past president of the Association of Crime Scene Reconstructionists and of the International Association of Bloodstain Pattern Analysis, and I'm very pleased that he is with me today on our show. Hello.
Hello, and thank you for having me, Mr. Lopate.
Did you always want to be a cop, or were you inspired by something that happened in your life?
I started out to be an architect, and I had a mentor in my life that was my cousin that lived on a farm within sight of me, but that was like a mile away. And whatever he did in life, I followed suit. He became a professional baseball player, threw his arm away, so I dropped baseball. He went into the military. I tried to join the military. The recruiter said, son, go to college. I did. And then when my cousin Ralph got out of the military, he became a police officer, and that's what I pursued.
But I suspect you didn't get into think about blood for a while, except if you just happened to come upon it.
Not at all. Blood confused me with the first scene that I went to. I sort of parked blood and put it on my pay it no mind list and didn't pay attention to it because I did not understand it until I became very embarrassed in a scene.
You were just a regular cop?
I was.
And a narc?
I was a narc also. Afterwards, I worked undercover for 4 years.
But you say you were inspired to study blood after an incident that you refer to as the vomit case.
Yes, I was a rookie and went to a scene late at night. I wasn't feeling well. I walked up some creaky stairs and only could use my flashlight, and I pushed open a door that was squeaking. It's just like right out of a movie. And I shined my light across the room and found this man lying on the floor in his boxer shorts, blood all over the room. And to make a long story short, I called out detectives and said we had an axe murder. The man was vomiting. He had ulcers and was vomiting up blood all over the room, and he'd been drinking and was laying in it and fell over, and I just assumed this has got to be an axe murder. That was my limited knowledge. I'd only been a police officer a couple of years.
Now, after you learned a lot more, would you have walked in there and immediately have known that he was suffering from an ulcer?
I would recognize the patterns right away because those patterns are not meaningful to the type of murder cases that I work. So there's a tremendous difference.
I'm assuming that things like vomit also play a role in your analysis.
Coughing up blood, yes, and spitting up blood, expirating blood is what we call it. It has a certain pattern to it with the little bubbles and saliva and strands of mucus that we can identify from other types of patterns.
How long has the field of blood spatter analysis been around?
It started, surprisingly to your listeners, 1895 by an individual in Poland that did some studying of it. And PETA would not accept this today, but he was beating rabbits with hammers and studying the patterns that were created from beatings. And I still have some of those pictographs from them in color of those patterns.
Actually, I'm not surprised because it sounds to me like something Sherlock Holmes would have been interested in. He would have noticed right away that there was some kind of blood spatter pattern.
That's true, or Charlie Chan.
Mm-hmm. So, but did it become a serious area of research?
A very serious area in the late 70s, in the 80s, it became very serious. After other studies were done in Australia in the 30s, then it became very serious here in the United States.
Now, he was the first man was killing rabbits and checking how their blood went. How much can you learn from that about what you see in a crime scene?
Having experience and doing experiments and going to murder scenes and seeing it over and over and over again, your mind becomes like a library of facts and all these patterns. And then once you go into a scene, you can recognize what that particular blood pattern means. And then what we do is reconstruct and work backwards, which is called reverse engineering.
But you say you were frustrated by what researchers were doing in the lab when you started out. There was some kind of a disconnect between the research and what you were coming upon in the real crime scenes.
Well, even though there was research then, it wasn't public knowledge. Police departments across the country knew nothing of it. And when I came in, when I went to different venues and lectured, I was accused of delivering smoke and mirrors, that this made no sense. And this was to laboratories.
What were you saying? What were you telling?
I would talk about the patterns and how bloodstain interpretation has meaning to it. Grab patterns on clothing has meaning to it. Gunshot cases where there's blood expelled is a different type of pattern where someone is beaten. And they had no experience. And I would have been skeptical of it also, but that was in the late 70s, and then it caught on. Now it's become part and parcel to law enforcement, especially in the area of homicide investigations.
Well, how much would I be able to know? For example, if I shot you from this distance, or if I shot you from across the room, would there be a big different blood splatter behind
you? If blood comes out, if you shot me and you shot me in the forehead, blood goes back towards the shooter in a mist-type pattern, tiny, tiny, tiny little drops. And if you say you're 20 feet away, Mr. Lopate, and yet I find on your collar, or they find on your collar or your clothing these little tiny spots, that only travels a distance of 3 to 4 feet maximum.
So I would have had to have been close range.
You'd been lying. You're within close range.
Do you use real blood in your experiments? Could you use ketchup or corn syrup and red food coloring?
I do use corn syrup in trials. When I testify to give demonstrations to jurors, I use real blood, animal blood, when I have to do some serious experiments in an area that I'm not acquainted with, and I want to find the results, so I will use the real blood as a source.
And when you testify, you actually do demonstrations?
I do, in front of the jurors as late as end of January in Wyoming at a small community where I spatter it, where I drop it. I give them about a 15-minute orientation or a tutorial about bloodstain patterns and tell them it's all about patterns.
And can that actually be the key evidence in a case?
Oh, sometimes it turns the whole case. It'll flip a case around, just the pattern interpretation alone.
My guest is Rod Englert, E-N-G-L-E-R-T, who's written with the help of Kathy Becerro a book called Blood Secrets, Chronicles of a Crime Scene Reconstructionist. It has a foreword by Ann Rule, who has been on the show a few times to talk about some of her true crime books. So here you are. You're doing these demonstrations, and I'm sure that the other side is saying, wait a minute, there are all sorts of problems with this, in the same way that we saw in the O.J. case when even some genetic evidence was undermined.
Yes, and the jurors need to be educated. That's my job. And in the O.J. case, Dr. Henry Lee has used ink at that time to a demonstration for the jurors to help them to understand this discipline that I'm talking about. So it's very important for me to tell them what I'm going to tell them, then I show them and tell them, and then I tell them what I told them.
And you say that blood pattern analysis is part science but also part art?
Yes, it is. It's all about the analyst interpretation of that scene, and there can be error in that. Different analysts may see things differently. They may see more. Sometimes I go in, I miss things. Another analyst can come in and catch it, and vice versa.
Does it take a special constitution to deal with all of that blood and guts?
I would say that you have to be hardened to it, although I still have compassion. I have compassion to the victims. As you'll notice, my dedication is for the victims. And yes, I do have a lot of compassion, especially when there's children involved and the heinous crimes that I see. But I know I have a job to do, and it's putting puzzles together.
Yeah, part of the problem, I would think, for me would be being able to keep it on the crime scene and not bring it home with me. Because sometimes you can see some pretty disturbing things, and they stay with you for a long time.
A long time. And I learned in the Los Angeles Police Academy, don't take it home with you. Associate with other individuals other than just the people that deal with crime scenes, and I've chosen to do that in life.
You've assisted in cases around the world. Where have you gone?
I have. I've been in Russia and did some teaching in Russia, trained 22 individuals in South America, in Bogota, Colombia. That was very interesting. Spent a week with them. We fell in love with them. We had to have protection from the State Department and from the embassy with special vehicles because of the crime. They have 15 murders a day in Bogota. So that's another place. Argentina, Canada, of course. I've taught there and also in Scotland Yard.
How does the United States compare to other countries in the field of blood spatter analysis?
You know, we have a worldwide association. I think we're all talking the same language.
But is there enough funding as far as you're concerned?
Not for some departments, no. There's a lack of funding.
How realistic are you knew I was going to ask this question. How realistic are TV shows like CSI and Law and Order when it comes to this sort of thing?
It's pretty bad in the fact that jurors have high expectations of us that we cannot deliver. They expect us to wave a wand, get answers immediately. A good example is the Robert Blake case that I testified on. I told them that that is not the way it is in real life, that in real life we cannot do those things that you see on television. I do this each time I testify because of that CSI so-called effect, and we try to lower their expectations to the real world.
Even if they aren't that realistic, the shows are very popular because you think that we're fascinated by the way science can reveal things about a crime?
That's true. The most realistic, though, is Cold Case, the shows about cold cases, because those are based on real cases. The CSI Miami, the CSI New York, Los Angeles, they're all not true.
Now, how much can you know? You come upon a crime scene and you see blood there, and the blood is bright red, or you come in and it's brown. Can you pretty much date the time the bleeding started from the color of the blood?
To age blood, no, it's not possible. But it is when you see it bright, you also look at the body because you'll also see what's called rigor mortis. You'll see what's called lividity, and you'll know that a serious period of time has passed if you see dark brown blood, coagulated blood that's dry in a carpet, dry on the walls. It does change over time, and you recognize and can immediately notice as an investigator that we have some time that has passed as opposed to bright red blood, but then you also look at the body also, and you depend upon your phone calls. In a homicide scene, Mr. Lopate, there's a lot of moving parts. A lot of things are going on. You have to act quickly. You have to think sharply. You have to be able to hold things up and get people on witnesses, canvassing, et cetera.
Also have to know whether the blood is the blood of the victim or the person who committed the crime.
That's very important to be able to confirm who belongs to who, what blood pattern belongs to what person.
A caller wants to know whether you studied or know about the blood spatter in the JFK case.
No, I was not involved in the JFK case.
Uh-huh. But that's something that I'm sure many people have analyzed.
A lot of people, a lot of associates that I have dealt with have looked at the O.J. Simpson, I mean, not the O.J. Simpson, the J.F. Kennedy case, and I have not.
Another listener points out that Sherlock Holmes was studying blood spatter in a case in Scarlet in 1897.
That's very good.
So he was on the cutting edge, actually.
He was on the cutting edge because 1895 is the person in Poland that started this.
So do you see any areas for improvement here, or are we pretty much know what we can ever know?
That's a very good question, Ian, that I just found a pattern I'd never seen before in a case that I'll be testifying in 2 weeks on the East Coast here. And it's a pattern never seen before by myself or others that I've conferred with. I know what the pattern is, and I am working on that and trying to replicate that particular pattern.
So that's what you have to do. You find the pattern, and then you go into a laboratory and you say, okay, if I think it was a knife, a stab wound that came at a 45-degree angle, if I hit this thing with blood at a 45-degree angle, I'm going to get the same spatter?
Yes, that's a good example of that. It is.
Rod Englert's book, written with the help of Kathy Becerra, is called Blood Secrets, Chronicles of a Crime Scene Reconstructionist. It's published by St. Martin's Press and the Thomas Dunn Books imprint. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. ¶¶